90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Welcome to Cowtown Conversation. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, our guest, we're continuing our health series, and I know a lot of us in the last 10 days have lost a lot of sleep. And our conversation today, we're going to be talking with Melissa Becker, Director of Neurology and Sleep Services at Truman Medical Center. And good morning, Melissa. Are you with us this morning?
Good morning. I am. Thank you.
Good morning. So before I go into that, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention considers sleep insufficiency a major public health problem. People nodding off while performing daily tasks have been linked to motor vehicle crashes, medical errors, and industrial disasters. People who do not get sufficient sleep are more likely to suffer from chronic diseases such as high blood pressure, hypertension, diabetes, which we'll be talking about next week, depression and obesity, as well as cancer, increased mortality, and reduced quality of life and productivity. Insomnia and obstructive sleep apnea are two types of major culprits, according to the CDC, and between 50 and 70 million U.S. adults are believed to have a sleep disorder or wakefulness disorder. So that gave me a little bit of an intro. So good morning, Melissa. So you're originally from Kansas City, Missouri area, or are you a transplant here?
I am a transplant. I moved here from Ohio about 4.5 years ago.
Okay. So you have some very extensive medical background and training. You have your RN, your registered nurse, master's in nursing. And can you tell listeners a little bit about your medical training?
Yes, I've been in the medical field actually since I was 18. I've worked pretty much any job in the hospital setting that you could imagine. I was a PCA and worked my way up. I worked as a neurodiagnostic tech, doing EEG and sleep studies, and then I got my nursing degree. I worked at the Ohio State University Medical Center as a nurse on their cardiovascular unit for several years, and then I got into administration, and then my husband got a new job, and that's how we ended up here in Kansas City.
So you're the Director of Neurology and Sleep Services at Truman Medical Center. How long have you worked at Truman?
I have been at Truman for 3 years.
Sleep is something that we don't really think about. We just think we go into our room, turn the TV off, and turn the light off, and get into bed. But Melissa, what is the purpose of sleep?
So sleep is actually one of the most important parts of the day, and it's extremely important for your body. That is the time where your body is actually repairing itself at the cellular level. You know, the less sleep that you get, the more susceptible you are to getting sick and getting the viruses and colds and just feeling run down all the time. So your body needs that time to rejuvenate and heal itself and rest between each day.
How many hours of sleep does the average person need per night? Because I can tell you when I was a retired military, when I was in the Gulf, my sleep pattern was from midnight to 5 a.m. in the morning, and I sustained it for a while. But the one day a week that I had that I was off, I would sleep 10 and 12 hours a day. But how much sleep does a typical person need per day?
So that is going to be a very individualized, because some people don't need as much sleep as others. But typically, the recommendation is between 8 and 9 hours of sleep a night. Anybody that gets less than 7 hours of sleep, they're about 3 times more likely to become infected with colds and stuff like that.
Melissa, as I kind of opened up, is going to sleep as easy as just getting into bed and turning off the lights, or do we really need to begin to prepare for sleep?
Actually, it depends on the person as well. Some people have, like myself, I have no issues. As soon as I get in bed, my head hits the pillow, I'm out like a light. Other people, they can't fall asleep for the life of them. So at that point, yes. It's definitely best for them to have a routine. An hour before bedtime, start developing that routine. It might include medications, maybe some reading, disconnecting from your phone, the TV. Actually, they recommend that you don't have a TV in your room at all if you have issues with sleep. Try journaling before bed in order to write down, what might be on your mind. And then maybe some soothing, like chamomile tea or something beforehand, can help get your body in that mode to go to sleep and relax and let you drift off in a better way.
I know one of the things that we're so connected to our electronic devices, and I was reading something, like just the light from that really does a lot with people, because it essentially wakes your brain back up. So, even if you put that nighttime filter on there or turn the light down, it'll be a lot easier to help you either fall asleep, or if it goes off in the middle of the night, for you to stay asleep instead of just your body being abruptly woken up by that bright flash of light that comes from our cell phones.
Absolutely. Yep. Anything you can do to reduce that, turn it upside down so the screen's down on the dresser or nightstand, wherever you happen to keep it, that will help a lot.
Melissa, how does stress and anxiety impact our ability to have a restful and peaceful sleep? Because I know for those people that may worry about everything, the world's going to end tomorrow, everything's an emergency. How does that impact their ability to get a restful night's sleep?
Well, I mean, that impacts your ability to basically turn off your brain so that it can rest. So, the more anxiety and stress that you have that you're not dealing with in a proper and healthy way, the harder it is for you to fall asleep, and then the less sleep that you're going to get.
So is anxiety and stress a part of a sleep disorder, or is it something that may contribute to a sleep disorder?
It will definitely contribute to your sleep disorder. It would, we can call it, insomnia, where due to that you're not able to fall asleep, or a parasomnia where you can fall asleep but you can't stay asleep because your brain and your mind are just constantly going. And there's some times when I lay down at night and I think of everything that I should have done that day and I didn't do, and it just, if you keep a notebook beside your bed and write some of the stuff down, that helps kind of brain dump and allow you to fall asleep better.
I have to say, I do keep that, because sometimes I'm sleeping and you have that great idea, and if you don't write it down, then the next morning it's like, and what was I thinking about that? So yeah, I do that sometimes, because then it kind of helps, as you said, turn your mind off.
Yes, it does.
So how important, as we were talking about earlier, to have that routine or pattern so that, you know, if you've got evening meds, you want to take those evening meds, before, you know, a little bit before you go to sleep. You know, if you've got something that helps you take, help that you may take to help you fall asleep, you know, that routine. But then, and by what time should you take that medication that may help you fall asleep and start turning your body off a little bit?
So that's an individualized assessment. You know, if you are a night owl and your schedule allows it and you go to bed later and you can wake up a little later, then you might start your routine at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. I go to bed usually between 9 and 10, so I would start mine around 8. Usually about an hour before you plan on going to bed is what they recommend.
Melissa, sometimes it's more than just an inability to fall asleep. And then when you fall asleep, your spouse may tell you that you're snoring. What causes people to snore?
So there are many different things that can cause people to snore. You can, obesity is a big one and probably the most notable one. You can have like malformations in your soft palate in your mouth that can cause you to snore. And then also too, if you are just in a deep, deep sleep, anybody can snore at that point. There's lots of different things that cause snoring, but I think the most obvious and biggest one is obesity.
Melissa, is there a point where snoring is more than just a discomfort and it could be a sign or a symptom of a larger problem and something that maybe we need to really begin to look at?
Actually, snoring is always something that you should look at. If you snore all the time and it's loud and people tell you that they can hear you, you need to have it checked out. And then the type of snore that you have, because sometimes you get those people that snore and they kind of stop and then they pick back up. Well, that's actually, they're not breathing anymore. They stop breathing periodically. And, so that, you know, affects your body and that doesn't let you get restful sleep. Snoring should always be something that you talk to your providers about or ask to have a consult to the sleep clinics for so that they can look at it and determine if it is something that you need to have treated with a CPAP or if it's something that, you know, losing 5 pounds could take care of.
So is that... when our partner may tell us that we're snoring, that's something that we really need to take a look and really listen to, because it could be underlying cause of something else, something that's even more potentially harmful to us.
Absolutely. And actually, snoring can be related to a lot of heart conditions as well. So if you are relatively fit and thin and your partner is telling you that you're snoring, you should really, really let your provider know, because it could mean that there's an underlying heart condition as well.
I know, Melissa, it can be difficult to discuss telling that partner that they're snoring because they're sleeping and not understanding. Is that something that you may want to maybe, you know, if since you're already up, maybe record it, a few minutes of it, to let that person really see what's going on so they may understand that?
I think that definitely depends on your relationship. I know, personally, I use a CPAP at home. My husband tells me all the time, if I don't have it on, he'll wake me up. You need to put that on. But it's recording it isn't a bad thing, because you do have some people that are like, oh, I don't snore. There's no way I could snore. So letting them hear themselves, or, yeah, I know I snore, but I don't think it's as bad as what you're saying it is, you know, that allows them to realize, oh, no, that actually is really, really bad. So, yeah, that's not a bad idea at all.
So I know, Melissa, there are many things that can impact our ability to get a restful sleep, such as sleep apnea, insomnia, sleep-related disorders, and we'll briefly talk about a few of them. You've mentioned, talked about sleep apnea before. What is sleep apnea?
So sleep apnea is, just in layman's terms, basically it's snoring and then you have apneic periods through the night, which means you stop breathing. Some people, it's not very often. Some people can stop breathing up to 30 seconds at a time and up to, you know, 15 or 20 times an hour. Depending on how severe their sleep apnea is. And then you have some people that, if they fall asleep without their CPAP, they very well could not make it through the night because they have such severe apneic periods through the night. So sleep apnea is basically you stop breathing through the night.
So as we're going through this, and if you've got some questions about sleep, give us a call in our studio line, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. So then, as you said, that's what sleep apnea is. What is restless leg syndrome?
So restless leg syndrome, it's described many different ways. Basically, people will describe it as, I feel like I have ants or bugs crawling up and down my legs, or my legs jump, or they just can't stop moving. It's an involuntary action, and it has to do with the muscles and the nerves of your body just kind of being out of line and out of alignment and firing on their own accord. When it comes to trying to go to sleep, and it can happen at any time. So it's not just at bedtime that you can get restless leg syndrome too.
As we were, just take a step back, as we were talking about sleep apnea, is there something that medically causes sleep apnea that makes a person more predisposed to become an individual with sleep apnea? Is it just something that may happen?
Well, definitely, like I said, obesity is a big contributor. You know, and that's neck circumferences. So even bodybuilders or football players that have large neck circumferences, that can cause you to have sleep apnea. And then you have what they call central sleep apnea, and that is what occurs when your brain doesn't send the proper signals to the muscles that control the breathing. So, you know, it could just be a medical condition. It could be something that was passed down that is causing your brain not to send those signals to your breathing muscles, basically.
But listen, how is sleep apnea treated?
So sleep apnea, how it's treated is, first, you would consult with one of the sleep physicians and one of the clinics, and then they would refer you to one of the sleep labs for a sleep study. And basically what that is you go in between 7 and 8 o'clock at night, and they hook you up to our monitors with wires that are attached to your head and your body and around your chest. And then there's technologists that are highly trained, and they watch you sleep through the night, and they monitor your sleeping patterns. And then the physicians will look at those studies and they score them based on the patterns that they see. And then that will determine whether or not you are mild, mild to moderate, moderate to severe, and whether or not you qualify for a CPAP at that time.
And this is one of the stories, one of the shows I really wanted to do, because I had a personal experience with it. About 4 years ago, I was in D.C. at a conference, and I left here with a person, And they went, you know, he was an attorney here in Kansas City, and he told me, he said, you know, I have sleep apnea. If I sleep too much, just throw a pillow at me or whatever, or just, you know. And, you know, we went through the conference the entire week. We were making plans for the things we were going to do the next week based off of things we learned in the conference. And the following Wednesday, he had passed away. They found him in his bed. He died in his sleep. So for those that may not think the sleep apnea can kill you, it can. And it's something that you really need to get medical treatment for if you've been told you may have it or possibility that you may have it. So what is, as we talk about sleep apnea just a little bit more, how important is it, Melissa, for people to wear the CPAP if they have been diagnosed with sleep apnea?
It's extremely important. I mean, it's kind of like any other medical treatment. If you don't use it, it's not going to be beneficial. I'm not going to tell you that it's the most comfortable thing in the world, because it's not. But the more you wear it, the more you get used to it, and the more your body adjusts. And then the nights that you don't wear it, you can definitely tell. My father, actually, he had one of the first CPAPs ever when we were living in Ohio. And they've progressed immensely in comfort and quietness. So the companies are working really hard to make them as best as they can for patients. But you definitely need to use it and use it every night in order for it to be effective.
So like taking a daily vitamin, did you take it or use it even if you don't think you may need to?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we've talked about sleep apnea, and we've talked about the restless leg syndrome. Periodic limb movement disorder, what is that?
Periodic limb movement disorder? That's not one that I'm the most familiar with.
Okay.
I can get you some information. I'm sorry.
No. You're fine. Give us 1 second. We've got a caller. Caller, can you tell us your name and what part of town you're calling from, what your question or comment is for Melissa?
Yeah, this is Morris Copeland, and I'm calling from Grandview.
Yes, Mr. Copeland, what's your question?
Yeah, I have a comment.
Okay.
There are a lot of occupations that are trouble to the respiratory and the pulmonary system, and we have people with sleep apnea should be aware of that, and so should the company, that those people may take a personal protective equipment to them in certain areas and certain occupations, certain jobs that they do. We found that out at the Bannister Complex, that sleep apnea does affect your pulmonary system and your respiratory system, and it denigrates the process of sleep apnea. Well, I just thought I would put that out so that people would understand. Watch yourself around dusty places. Watch yourself about the air that is circulated in your workplace if you have these types of problems. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Copeland. So can environmental factors impact our sleep, Melissa, especially if you may have sleep apnea?
Absolutely. He is absolutely correct. All of that is 100% correct. If you are out and about in dusty areas, or shift workers have an increased incidence of sleep apnea as well. So, yeah, absolutely. He is correct, 100%.
So Is sleepwalking a sleep disorder? Or how is sleepwalking classified?
Sleepwalking, it is a sleep disorder. It is one of the it's fairly rare, but it also occurs mostly in children. So kids may experience it more than adults. And then usually they grow out of it. So, yes, if you have a child that sleepwalks, you should definitely have them checked for an underlying sleep disorder. But, you know, that's not saying adults don't get it. But usually it's when they sleepwalk, it's more of a secondary thing to some type of medication or something. And, it's more of a confusion or, you know, kind of waking up in that foggy state and they don't remember things.
And hypersomnia, you know, I've got a friend and they have a child that has, well, they had a job working like as a cashier and they would just fall asleep on their feet while they were sitting there. How serious a condition is that and what can be done to treat that?
So hypersomnia is also, it's known as excessive daytime sleepiness. It can be a condition on its own, or it's a secondary condition to sleep apnea. So if you're not getting good rest at night because you're not breathing, you're going to be sleepier in the daytime. So you asked me what some treatments are, you know, a CPAP at night. There's medications that help do this as well. But sometimes lifestyle changes can help do that as, you know, exercise, not drinking alcohol or using drugs, high protein diet. Those are some ways too that help hypersomnia.
So, and then as we talk about the, how you go from hypersomnia to insomnia, what is insomnia?
So, insomnia is the inability to fall asleep or to sleep. And it can last from, so, in acute cases, it can last from one night to a few weeks, or people can have it, you know, on a chronic basis, whereas all the time. The best treatment for that is, you know, medications, trying to reduce the amount of stress that you have, which obviously is difficult, especially right now. And then, you know, those kind of bedtime routines that we talked about. It can also be secondary to, you know, caffeine use or tobacco use and alcohol use. So avoiding that stuff might help with your insomnia.
Okay. So those are all good things to look at to help if you have insomnia to keep you from being impacted by more by that. So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI. This is Kansas City's community radio station. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Stay tuned. Right back after this short break. And we're back. This is Joseph Jackson, host of Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM. And today, our guest is the director of sleep at Truman Medical Center, Melissa Becker. So as we were talking about before we went to break, Melissa, insomnia and some of the ways to treat it. How is a person diagnosed that they may have insomnia?
So, the best way that we diagnose them, or how the providers will diagnose, is they will ask them to keep a sleep diary, which is just basically logging every night, what you do before bed, how you feel before you go to bed, what time you tried to go to bed, what time you finally felt like you fell asleep, what time you woke up, and then if during the day you were taking any naps or, you know, what your activities were, because that gives them some insight as to if this is something that is more environmentally related or if it can be changed by some of your habits, or if this is more of a biological thing where we need to treat it with medication or something along that line.
Melissa, how many people do you treat each year in a sleep clinic at Truman Medical Center?
So we see over 1,900 patients a year just in our sleep labs alone. And then we see approximately 2,400 to 2,500 patients in our sleep clinic.
So what is the most common sleeping disorder that you treat at Truman?
I would say sleep apnea by far is the most common, just because it's the most prevalent right now. And then I would say insomnia would be the second.
Why is sleep apnea one of the most prevalent sleep disorders that we have right now? Is it because of environment, people, you know, stress, working from home, or is it just something that, as we said earlier, you know, you can't really get a pinpoint why it's occurring?
Well, I think now people are becoming more aware of what sleep apnea is, and its causes. And I think too, in America and just in the world, we are living longer. And so we're learning more about how the sleep apnea affects people even as you get older, as well as how it interacts and affects other, you know, possible diagnoses that you could have. Lots of heart patients that have major heart issues. Just by using a sleep or a CPAP machine, it allows your heart to rest a little bit and can help heal it so that you no longer need some of the heart medications. So there's lots of benefit to having your sleep apnea treated. And then also, too, I think the prevalence of obesity is a lot higher today than it was even 20 years ago. So I think that is playing a major contributing factor to the incidence of sleep apnea as well.
So it's really easy right now to treat sleep apnea. I know you turn on the TV and there's another device, you know, something they can implant that you don't have to have the CPAP for. So are those devices also something that people can look into?
They absolutely are. They're almost retainer-like that they can insert at night to help keep their soft palate where it needs to be. There are others that can be implanted, but there are very specific requirements to meet those. You have to have very mild to sleep apnea in order to qualify. You have to be under a certain BMI for it to have the greatest effect. So it's definitely another great option other than a CPAP machine, but you have to work at it and just find what works for you as well.
So hold on, we've got a caller. Caller, can you tell us your name, what part of town you're calling from, or what your question or comment is on our... go ahead.
Yes, my name is Carl, and I'm calling from South Kansas City. And I was calling concerning insomnia. I have had insomnia for years, and you know what? I have always tried to ask doctors for prescriptions and everything, and you know what? Insomnia is one of the worst things that can happen to a person. You know what? I have suffered with insomnia most of my adult life. And Not being able to sleep is a terrible thing. Now, I'm very familiar with Truman Medical Center. And you know what? I would like to be directed with a clinic where they could help me with this.
Absolutely. You can go ahead and give our clinic a call. The phone number that you can call is 816-404-1000 and ask for the sleep clinic, or you can be directed directly to the sleep clinic and call 816-404-0585.
Thank you very much. I'm gonna follow up with this.
Absolutely. We look forward to treating you.
Oh, yes, because you know what? It's terrible. It is terrible.
Yes, it is.
Thank you so much, Carla, for calling in. I hope you definitely follow up, because the sleep disorder, any amount of sleep being lost can be a hard thing, so we definitely wish you well in that.
Thank you very much.
So I know sometimes people are afraid, Melissa, to, you know, reach out and get help, but, you know, why should they really, as that caller called out, you know, instead of suffering in silence, you know, they may have something that can be easily treatable. Is there a fear to that? The people, you know, they're afraid. You know, why do people just sometimes not reach out to look at getting help?
I think it's a lot of things. I think it's a fear factor of the unknown and not knowing what's going to happen. I think, you know, it's time. It does take time to come and see the provider and to talk with them and then to get testing done. And then I think it's also a financial worry. People are worried about what the cost is going to be and, you know, am I going to be able to afford this, or is my insurance going to pay for this? So I think it's a lot of things. But honestly, you know, at Truman, our mission is to treat everybody. So we want you to come and we do what we can to help you figure out if you don't have insurance, how to best treat you and how to get you the services and stuff that you need.
Melissa, I have to say, I've taken friends to have the sleep studies, and it was in a hospital setting. You know, when you go to hospital, you're thinking that, you know, there's sick people there, people who are not well, who are trying to get well, and it's either too hot or too cold, and it's that hospital bed in that hospital room that you just don't think about it. But you all sleep clinic is something that is not what people expect. And I'm not going to tell it. I don't want to give it away. I want you to talk about where you all sleep clinics are and how they're set up.
So we now have two sites that we offer our sleep lab services. The first one is the Sheraton Hotel downtown off of McGee. And then the second one is Stony Creek Hotel and Convention Center out in Independence off of Bass Pro Drive. And so our sleep labs are hotel-based. So you get all the comforts and the amenities of being in a fancy hotel, having the big, nice, comfy beds, and getting your sleep studies at the same time. It's quiet, and our patients seem to love it. So it's worked really well for us. And, you know, it is something that is unique to Truman currently in the Kansas City area. There are other places around the U.S. that do use hotel-based labs, but it's unique to us in this area.
So, in other words, you get all the comforts of being in a hospital, but you have room service, so you don't have to eat hospital food.
Well, so usually you're in and out before room service is available. But yes, you have a fridge and a microwave. So if you want to bring snacks with you or drinks, you're more than welcome to. But usually what we do is bring you in just before bedtime so that you don't have a whole lot of time to think about it or fret about the testing. And then we wake people up early enough so that they can shower and get to work if they have to, or get home to family and kids or whatever else they might have going on.
So I know some places it may be a hospital study may be just done Monday through Thursday or whatever. You know, what days of the week does Truman conduct their hospital? Is it 7 days a week, you know, 5 days a week? How many days a week does Truman do their sleep lab studies?
We are available 7 days a week. And we really try to work with our patients to find the most accommodating days for them. You know, we realize that people have lives and they have other things going on, so they may only be available on a Saturday night. So that's what we work with. Other people, they can come in any time, and that's great, and we'll get you in. We are open and run pretty much 7 days a week.
So you don't have to worry about it. You know, I can only do it Monday through Thursday, so I could do it on a Saturday night, so I can get up the next morning and not have to worry about my schedule and be good to go and have gotten a medical quality sleep study, not in a hospital, but in a nice, restful environment, just like it would be at home.
Absolutely. Yep.
So I have got friends who have sleep apnea, and they complain about wearing the CPAP and BiPAP. And I know we touched on this earlier, but I definitely want to, how critical, again, is it that they use that equipment?
So, again, it's absolutely critical. It used to be that there was one type of mask, and that was all that you could use. But the companies have come out now with so many different options and so many different varieties of masks and fits and whatnot. So I would say that if they're not using it because the mask is uncomfortable, to reach out to their company that supplied the CPAP to them, because they can get them fitted for another type of mask, or it could be that they're in the improper size and need to size up or size down. I know some people say they're claustrophobic, so they don't like the full face mask, but they do have what they call nasal pillows, so they only go under your nose and they don't cover your mouth. So those are a great option for people that way. So definitely, you know, that technology is evolving and becoming better every day. We now have some that have memory foam in them, so that they're more comfortable and don't leave marks on your face through the night. So definitely reach out if you're having issues with your masks, or if that's the reason why you're not wearing it, and tell them that, so that they can get you into a different type of mask. Or it could be something with your machine, where if you've had the same settings for several years, it may be something where you need to be reevaluated and your settings might need to be changed, or you might need more humidification because it's winter and it's dry, and in the summer you need less because it's, you know, it's the summer and there's a lot of humidity out there. So, you know, definitely call into the clinic, call into your provider and ask those questions, because they can help you walk through that and give you different things to try to make it a more comfortable experience for you.
So, Melissa, is a sleep study hard, or does it involve any discomfort? I mean, it seems like it's an easy test because all I have to do is come in and go to sleep.
So, it's not hard, and I would not say that it causes discomfort. It is a little bothersome because you do have wires that are attached to your head. You do have belts that go around your chest and your waist to monitor your breathing. And then you do have some patches that go on your legs and your arms to monitor your limb movements. So it's a little awkward when you're sleeping, because you do have these wires to kind of contend with through the night. Also, too, you know, we ask people to sleep on their backs because that is the best way for us to get the data that we need and to see exactly how, you know, severe your sleep apnea might be. But I know, like for myself, I am a side sleeper, so sleeping on my back was really difficult for me. But, you know, the technologists are amazing, and they help, like, talk you through that stuff and get you through the study, and then get you through the night and make it as pleasant as possible.
We've got a caller, Mr. Copeland, is calling back. Mr. Copeland, you've got another question or comment?
Yeah, I had a guy that worked for me, and he had sleep apnea. And it's, I guess as far as I can measure it, he had it bad. He had a CPAP, and I would notice him while he was working. And I talked to him one day, and one of his biggest fears was being fired. And I talked to him and asked him, you know, well, how could I help him? And what I could get from him, what I could glean from what he was saying, is just when those times come down on him and all energy or rest is gone, that he needed a refreshment time, a refreshing time, which may consist of going, taking a little walk and coming back to work, unstressing himself. And we worked that. I watched him very, you know, not very closely. I didn't have to because, I mean, I got to know him. And it worked. But one of the biggest fears that he had while he worked was being caught in the state, in that state, and being fired. So, you know, I just heard the lady say the comfortable position that you sleep in, the CPAP, and all that. Those are in the studies, they're doing a good job. They're making good strides with the mask and the comfort and all that good stuff. Find what is actually comfortable to you, to the person, and find out how they can feel better. And also on these jobs, that ought to be a responsibility of the job. This man was a good worker. He was a good worker. Work with the people. This is an illness. There's no reason for anyone to be disciplined when it can be adjusted. It's not going to cost anybody any more money. You're not going to lose that much time on the job. Work with the person. If the person needs to go and relax for 10 or 10 minutes, if he needs to take a walk, if he needs to go out in the air, give it to him and let them go about their business and treat the illness. I appreciate it. Thank you a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Copeland. So, Melissa, we talk about the sleep study. How are the results of the sleep study used?
So the results are used. So we have, it's resulted in two ways. So we have what we call a scorer, where it's a technologist that has a lot of sleep experience. They go through and they score the study. So they're looking for specific things in that study. Are you having multiple types of limb movements? Are you having lots of apneic events? And then the providers or the physicians, they go back through those studies, and then they determine, you know, the diagnosis from there. Yes, this person has sleep apnea. No, they don't. Or yes, it's really severe, and there might be an underlying cause that they also need to go see somebody else, you know, like cardiology for as well. So that's how the results are reviewed, and then the patient comes back into the sleep clinic and the provider sits down with them and goes over those results and tells them exactly what their treatment, their course of treatment is going to be. Or, you know, you don't have sleep apnea, which is great. So if that's not the cause of what's going on, what other testing can we do for you in order to figure out what's going on? So that's how the patients are given their results and how it's kind of worked from there.
So, Melissa, the sleep lab at Truman is accredited. You know, people may think, well, I'm going to a hotel, it's like sleep, but it is accredited. Can you tell us a little bit about that process and your accreditation that you have for the sleep lab studies?
Yeah. So we are accredited through the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. And what that means is that we follow very rigorous rules. So basically, even though it's in a hotel, we have a little piece of that hotel that is treated just like a hospital when it comes to cleaning, when it comes to disinfectant, when it comes to patient privacy acts and responsibilities. You know, just the care that they're going to receive is exactly the same as what you would get in a hospital-based setting, just in a more comfortable hotel-based setting. It also means that we have, you know, board-certified physicians that are at our sleep labs every month for a certain amount of time. We do quality controls on our sleep techs, making sure that they're not missing anything through the night. If they are, that they're getting re-educated so that, you know, continuing on, that doesn't happen. And then continuous training as well. So they're, all of the technologists are required to do a certain amount of training through the year to maintain their certifications. And then they have to recertify just like an RN or somebody else does every so many years in order to keep that certification. So it's very rigorous. Then the American Academy of Sleep actually comes out and does on-site inspections to make sure that we are upholding to all those standards. And then we also get the Joint Commission inspections just like at the hospital. They come over to those labs to make sure that our, you know, infection control is where it needs to be and all of our cleaning standards are where they need to be and that we're following all the same rules and regulations that the hospital does as well. So, so that's what our accreditation.
You mentioned earlier, people may think that a sleep study is expensive and prescribed medication, whether it's a BiPAP, a CPAP, or other equipment is costly. But in most cases, Melissa, is a sleep study and the equipment covered by your insurance company?
So it depends on your insurance. But the majority of the time it is covered. You may have some co-pays or whatnot, but we work really hard before you have the study to determine what that is and to tell you what, if any, financial responsibility that you're going to have is before you have the study done so that you can make that decision yourself. And then afterwards, if a lot of the companies that supply the CPAPs, they have programs where as long as you use it so many hours per day, then yes, your insurance will cover it. If you don't use it, then you're financially responsible. So it's kind of a little incentive. And then for the patients that have minimal insurance or no insurance at all, we have contacts that, you know, we can work with them to get them a CPAP machine at a very, very reduced cost. Or, you know, at times, depending on circumstances, we can get one for free. Depending on what's going on. So, you know, we work really hard to make sure that the patients get what they need and when they need it so that they're not going without just because they may not have insurance or may not have the ability to pay for it at that time.
Melissa, as we close out, can you repeat the number for the sleep clinic so in case people will want to call to get more information?
I absolutely can. So if they want to call 816-404-0585, they will be able to talk with one of our sleep clinic staff, and we can answer their questions or get them scheduled to see one of our amazing providers here at Truman.
Thank you so much. I want to thank Melissa, the Director of Neurology and Sleep Studies at Truman, for being our guest today. We never encounter town conversations without a community minute. I would like to congratulate Vice President Joe Biden and Senator Kamala Harris on their victory in the presidential election. We have much work to do to heal a divided nation to become again a united nation. Teamwork makes the dream work and makes the work go a lot faster. So let's all look at what we can do to move forward and help our nation move forward. For Cowtown Conversations, I've been your host, Joseph Jackson. Join us next week as we complete, as we continue our health issues. November is National Diabetes Month, so we will be talking with Connie Kleinbeck next week, who is the clinic nurse advocate at Truman Medical Center about diabetes and what people can do to ensure they're getting treated for this. So for Cowtown Conversations, have a great day, stay safe, and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.
It's been a